I got your hat. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin, and I'm joined by the godfather of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm feeling froggy. Baseball's in full action. I get the Phillies jersey on. No name on the back. Maybe one day we'll put one there. Listen, I had a joke at Matt's expense at the start of the week. You know, we talked about practice making perfect in the previews. And I said, what, like when you were a kid and you used to run out in the backyard and throw a ball against the door and hope you'd make it to the majors? Well, Matt never made it to the majors, neither did I. But John, we're on the big show tonight. I'm having some mixed emotions because I said pre-show, we're not going to talk about the Paul brothers. You go and drop a Paul brother quote on me. I'm also kind of doing like a double cam situation, like I shouldn't, but I'm watching Cindy Dandwa fight 11-10-1 Caitlin Young, who's got a career win over Misha Tate. So yeah, it's a weird time to be an MMA fan. We got Bellator tomorrow, depending on when this comes out on Friday, then it's today. If it comes out after, then you know already what happened. You got the worst UFC card we've seen in a while coming up this weekend. It is a time, John Franklin. What a time.
All right, if you're still with us, let's talk baseball real quick, though. My boy was watching the Cubby game with me last night. My son Jackson's a Cubs fan. Cubs just swept the Dodgers, and we stayed up last night. I have to stay up too late on the West Coast. But we stayed up last night and watched them walk it off. His boy Anthony Rizzo, my kid, is flying high right now.
Last baseball thing I have, John, I'm dead serious. Got the chance to see Anthony Rizzo play when he was in Double A for your Portland Sea Dogs. Big fan.
Pretty exciting. So you're watching the Dandwa fight, huh?
Cindy.
Yeah, you'd have to be a real degenerate to put money on that. On this episode of Stoppage, we talk Romero's eye, Weidman's leg, and Zabit's future. But we begin with Jiří Procházka. Craig, Jiří Procházka had quite a performance this past weekend, putting Dominic Reyes on the highlight reel. I'll keep the intro short and just ask, is Procházka the real deal? Or is he like the man he just defeated? And maybe we're getting a little too excited about this kid a little too quickly.
Listen, I mean, John, you know, you hate to feed a fed horse, as they say, but way back when Matt and I had this whole entire bracket, this March Madness style thing, when the pandemic started, we needed something to talk about. And we went with Grand Prix style brackets for every single division. And in the thumbnail for light heavyweight, we had John Jones and Jiří Procházka. And this was before there was even a chance he was going to end up in the UFC. And now look at it. I mean, you've got Glover Teixeira taking on Jan Blachowicz, and you also have Jiří Procházka waiting in the wings, hoping to get his big title shot with that win over Dominic Reyes. And listen, we talked about this fight kind of pre-show. Is he kind of stealing the hype from Dominic Reyes? Like, where does he really land in all of this? Man, I think the sky's the limit for this guy. Like, you could tell pre-fight when he was doing some of his interviews with his crazy hair, it's almost like his mind moves so fast in his own native tongue that he's a hard time expressing himself in English, but you know that it's there and his language skills are starting to get better and better. Listen, I think this guy's a superstar coming into the UFC. It's just people didn't really see it. And now, holy smokes, I mean, he's talking in interviews like, yeah, you know, Dominic Reyes knocked me out in that fight. Like, I was straight up knocked out for 2 or 3 seconds on the up kick, and I just kind of grabbed him, got my bearings, and then I'm back in it. We're going strong. So listen, I love that he's almost like an anime character in real life, like other people have said before me. I love the way that he's putting on these big time performances on the big stage against Uzdemir on a big card in a main event against Reyes. I think the sky's the limit. I don't think we're getting excited about him too quick. He's the real deal.
You know, I tend to agree with you. Like, I lean more your way than the other way. I think that when I look at the kid and I look at what he's done, he's got quite a finishing streak that he's on. And I think that, you know, when we talk about fighters checking boxes, the question becomes, well, what else do you want him to do but what he's done? Right? So he finished guys that don't typically get finished. He finished big Jake Hewen and Brandon Halsey and Muhammad Wall and Fabio Maldonado and CB Dalloway. He's finishing all these guys. I guess my question would be, if you're not sold yet on him, what do you need to see to be sold? He's doing what he's being asked to do. We're going to send you out there against these guys and he's taking them out.
Like, that's the thing that Matt and I always talk about. You know, you might have this prospect, and I know Cindy Dandwa is a poor example. Maybe she wins this fight. Maybe I lose my shirt because I actually had Young on a parlay, and I feel stupid about that now. But we talk about some of these fighters coming into the UFC, and let's say they fought less than stellar competition. It's all about the ways that you're winning or finishing those fights. And for Prochazka, yes, were they 15-minute first rounds? Were they extended first rounds over with Ryzen? Yeah, sure. But look at the quality of opponent. Brandon Halsey's a good fighter. The Honey Badger, or Honey Bear, rather. Jake Hewn's a pretty good fighter. King Mo was long in the tooth, but it was a rematch. Fabio Maldonado looked like absolute dog crap when they fought. He looked terrible. But you really got to consider how he was winning these fights. And then you look at the losses. It's against some pretty good competition. King Mo was the second fight of the night and third fight in what, like 2 or 3 days in a Grand Prix scenario. And then to finish Uzdemir to eat his best shots, to finish Dominic Reyes. Yeah, I'm sold. And I'm glad that you're sold, Hurley guy. Glad that you're sold. All right, John. So we'll move on. And some of the biggest news and most shocking news from this past week was a budding Russian star, Zabit Magomed Sharipov, was taken out of the rankings by the panel. Then it was said that he had lost motivation and he was considering retirement. And then all of a sudden, possibly requiring career-ending surgery. And it was a Marcel Dorf tweet, so I'm going to read it out. Zabit Magomed Sharipov will undergo surgery soon. The outcome will determine if he will continue his MMA career. Info via I Lazarin. So, John, the question is, the future champ might be done, but do you believe all of the speculation, all of the things that are coming out of his camp? Because this guy had a super bright future just a few years ago.
He did, and I mean, you know, last we saw him, it was the win over Stevens and the win over Cater, so it's like, all right, now we got this guy, he's got a rocket ship, you know, strapped to his ass, and the sky, and you know, the sky's the limit. And I think that with him, where it gets weird, and I think that we've talked about this with Shamayev before, is I think sometimes these guys just do this retirement thing just to take the pressure off and to have the questions stop being asked and let them sort of just get settled into something. The difference here is that this guy's been out for a while, and we could play the pandemic card and we could say, oh, it was a pandemic. Man, this is a long time to be out. And it's almost like, what are you doing in the interim? Have you settled into a different life? I mean, 15 months out of the, you know, out of MMA, if you're someone who continues to train and you're in the gym all the time and you're doing classes and all that, and you're still a part of the MMA community at your gym, that's one thing, because you have a job and that's your everyday and that's okay. And then when you need to like crank things up a little bit, turn the volume up on your training, then you'll do so. I don't know enough about what he does and how connected he is to his gym to know how serious I should take this retirement. But I do know that a lot of people are using the retirement to just sort of keep the barbarians at the gate.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of scary. And, you know, I've seen since then he's hitting heavy bags. He's doing a spinorama. We're getting a decision in Dandois Young. So I'm either going to be really disappointed or really happy at this point of the show. But it is weird. I mean, Cater, Stevens, those are big names. That Brandon Davis one was crazy. You rarely see Sulev stretches. It was just unfortunate for him that there were two that night. But he's put on great performances. I'm really eager if he can come back. Everybody wants to see a Yair Rodriguez fight. Young wins. Holy smokes. Now she's 12-10-1. Let's go. Big win. Wow. I also bet on 0-1 Guardado earlier on in the night at -125. So let's get into it. Wow. But yeah, I'd like to see Zabit back because the guy's pure entertainment. And Matt kind of loves to hate him a little bit. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Let's get the social team pulling that clip of you losing it over the Young win. And as we move on, let's talk Yoel Romero. Craig, Yoel Romero, it was announced by Bellator earlier this week after moving the fight from mid-April to May 7th that Romero Rumble was no more. Romero will become eligible to reapply for clearance to compete in the coming months, and we look forward to seeing him make his Bellator debut in the near future. Bellator MMA will look to reschedule the highly anticipated Johnson versus Romero matchup at a future date. So here's what we got to figure out. And the issue with Romero is his eye. With Rumble fully entrenched in the Bellator Light Heavyweight Grand Prix, how are they going to be able to reschedule this? I mean, have we lost this fight until the Grand Prix sort of resolves itself? Do they somehow figure out a way to make him, the obvious answer they could do is make him an alternate and hope somebody else gets injured. That's a choice. But I mean, if you're doing a Grand Prix and you're moving dates anyway, what would an injury really matter? Are we gonna have to wait? Is this gonna turn into Romero gets the winner of the Grand Prix?
It's so tricky, right? Because I'm looking at it right now, like the canceled bout page on Tapology. Yoel Romero, age at fight, 44 years, 1 week. Rumble Johnson, 37 years, 2 months, and 1 day. like these guys are going to start to age less like wine and more like fruit. Like for Yoel Romero, did you see the picture of him in the cage where he's throwing the punch, but he's got like the creatine gut at 205? Like everybody thought a few years ago, Yoel Romero, it's an inevitability that he moves up to 205 and he competes in the UFC. And then they decided, hey, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? Well, if we're going with old fruit, probably not. So they let Yoel Romero go over to Bellator. Bellator gains a big signee. And this was the marquee fight, right? This was the poster fight. And we talked about it on Early Stoppage, even before Yoel Romero ended up with Bellator. We had that picture that people were ripping off from Craig Allen, yours truly, on the internet. So I was so excited to see the fight. Then I saw Yoel Romero maybe not look the best at 205. And then it comes out that he has this eye injury. Now, is it the wonky eye that we always saw in the UFC? And if so, why wasn't it an issue before, but it's an issue now? So I'd really like to kind of get a little bit more information on this. But to answer the question, how do you make the fight? Because Rumble already found a dance partner on really short notice, a guy that just recently competed in Jose Augusto Azevedo. That fight's going to be interesting. How's Rumble even going to look? Maybe Rumble loses that fight. Seriously. Has he been working on his stand-up or his jiu-jitsu? Because if you look at Azevedo, he just takes guys down and submits them quite easily. So maybe that's like the backup that they're waiting for. But it's tricky. I don't see them making this fight for a while.
Listen, I think that Yoel Romero needs to go, Bisping! Bisping! Okay, boy! Okay! And call Michael Bisping, because Michael Bisping was fighting for years with a fake eye. So whatever he was doing to you know, give the old Heisman to commission, Romero needs to figure that out, because that, you know, one eye didn't seem to affect Bisping too much. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that here's the problem with this, is that sometimes if Rumble Johnson wanted to be a fighter so bad, he would fight more than he has. He wouldn't go off and do all this other stuff. He wouldn't be connected to, like, you know, all these different things. So I think that if you're Rumble Johnson and your Yoel Romero fight gets you excited, I don't know if whoever the hell you just said gets him as excited as Romero would. So now we're facing the possibility of, okay, this guy might be a bad matchup for you. And you've lost the motivation. So now you go from having, you know, the marquee fight in this lightweight Grand Prix to maybe losing in the first round, which would be disastrous. And if I'm Bellator, listen, I don't want to start playing with this too much if I'm Bellator, but you got to make sure Rumble Johnson stays motivated.
I don't know. Like, it's just, it's an odd spot. So we'll move on from there, John. We'll talk about something that's big, big news. I mean, UFC 262 lost a banger, but in your backyard, Nate Diaz is going to be taking on Leon Edwards. They throw down at UFC 263 in June. There's Adesanya, Vettori, Figueiredo, Moreno 2, and now a featured five-rounder at welterweight. So, John, for Leon Edwards, is this fight worth waiting for again? Because you're going from waiting for Chimaev to taking on Muhammad for it to end the way it did. Now it's Diaz. Now it's a saga of Nate Diaz. And a follow-up question, and it's not even a question, it's a statement. You're going to be there, right?
I would love to, but no. Here's the deal. When I first put Leon Edwards in this thing, this is what I thought. So I'm gonna, I hate to answer questions with questions, but here we go. And it's not even that great of a question. It's just the thing that first popped into my head. Is Leon Edwards turning into like the Charlie Brown of MMA, where like every time Lucy holds the football, this guy's getting it snatched away? And does it leave us? One, does it give us an indication of maybe this is just what he's going to be? You know, where you're pulling for somebody, almost like a draft bust in a way, right? Like you're saying, oh, Greg Oden comes out of college and you want him because he looked good in that 1 year at Ohio State to be it. But you just kind of know based on looking at him, he's going to be a bust.
It was his knees.
It was his knees. But I'm just saying, can we start to maybe read the tea leaves with Leon Edwards and say, maybe it's just not in the cards for this guy. And as good as he is, he just keeps finding the banana peel. And we can't figure out, like, listen, Chimaev has, like, the shortened version of this, right? Which is, you know, Tony Ferguson and Khabib had a version of this. Tony Ferguson himself had a little bit of a version of this. A couple of fights we wanted to see for a while, never came through. But I don't know. I mean, I think that I like to watch Leon Edwards fight. But he's starting to get real bad vibes. And I'm starting to think that maybe this guy just has – When Brock Lesnar said Frank Mir had a horseshoe up his ass, Leon Edwards might have the opposite. Whatever the opposite of a horseshoe is, that's what he's got up his ass.
Yeah, listen. So my trouble with Leon Edwards, it's like, look at the wins, look at the losses. It's good competition. They're good wins. Was he a boring fighter at one point? Maybe, but he really looked good against Bilal Muhammad until the bad eye poke, the bad, bad one. So when I think about Leon Edwards, it's okay, well, what do? Do you go the pure competition route or do you go the pure entertainment route and beat the entertainers? And he had the opportunity of pure competition the way that he was lined up. You beat Shamayev, that's kind of a double-edged sword if you lose. But if you win, wow, you probably get a title shot. But now Leon Edwards, I'm assuming, probably looked at the landscape and went, well, Covington's there, Luque's there, Burns is back there. So I get these guys that I really have to worry about in the mix at the top. What happens if I beat? I mean, listen, Bilal Muhammad to short notice. That's like a tune-up to get ready for competition. You lose, you still kind of lose a lot in terms of stock. But if you win, it keeps your name relevant and you get to feel good about yourself. You beat Nate Diaz. Who do you get? I mean, the conversation on the streets is probably Jorge Masvidal. Diaz, I don't know what he's got left at this point, but you beat Nate Diaz. It doesn't gain you much in terms of stock in the division. But man, the fans are going to be behind you if you beat him convincingly. You beat him and Jorge Masvidal. I still think that that holds water. So for Leon Edwards, it's, listen, gain the fans' attention because most people haven't been in the camp, Leon Edwards. Most people haven't really been rooting for him. You beat those guys, you get the shot at a champ. Win or lose, you probably gain some stock.
You know, here's the one thing I'll say before we move on that Leon Edwards should be happy about. Sometimes you get a fight and you think to yourself, like, I'm in a no-win situation, right? I lose to Nate Diaz, and people are like, this guy fights it once every 3 years. I'm losing to him. I beat Nate Diaz. People say, this guy fights once every 3 years. Of course you beat him. There's no way to win in that situation. But I will say this. Chael, and here's our first Chael reference, mentioned something a couple weeks ago that kind of stuck in my head, which is...
I just lost all my parlays. Oh, Chael D'Elia.
I'm just trying to run a show here, folks. And I got my degenerate co-host. I know you guys love this because you're all gamblers, okay? But I'm just trying to. Because you know what's going to happen? Here's what's going to happen, folks, is that I'm going to get blamed for professionalism, not Craig. Because everybody Craig's like Raymond. Everybody loves Craig, right? But what happens to dear old John? John gets blamed for the professionalism. And we move on. Here's the point that Chael made. The point that Chael made was that there's kind of this other division that you can find yourself in where there's big fights, but they're not necessarily championship fights. So we have this situation where if you're Leon Edwards and you're being talked about in that conversation of guys who are going to go in there, bang it out, the fight's not going to the floor, it's not quite a Legends League, but listen, let's call it for what it is. It's a money fight division. These guys are money fights. And if you're being included in that, there's something good to that because you can parlay that into a title shot. You could do like Jorge Masvidal does, where 1 minute you're fighting for the BMF belt, and the next minute you're fighting for, you know, I don't know if Chael said this, but if he did, props to him. If he didn't say it, I'm going to say it. They should just make a BMF division, and it'll just be guys that go in there and slug it out. I mean, you got the belt. I know I'm not going to get a lot of support for this, but maybe you just make it unofficial. Maybe you just make it, you don't put the rankings out. You just, these are guys that compete in that space and are in that orbit. All right. And we move on. Craig, Chris Weidman did what pretty much you have to do. Listen, he's still his father's son. And he told Errol Hawani this week that if I can get my body back to where I feel like that, I'm that guy again, I 100% want to fight. Question. When he stepped into the ring with Uriah Hall, was he that guy again? Because he hadn't been that guy for a couple fights. So is this the play for Weidman that you have to say, I'm coming back, that you have to say, I want? I mean, I would imagine, and I'm not trying to hedge your answer here or lead the witness, if you will, but I would imagine that if you don't say that, then what does the next 12 months of your life become? You just,
yeah, I mean, yeah, you got to have an end goal in mind. I apologize for cutting you off there. I'm just, that was, there was a lot riding on that. Yeah, listen, if you're Chris Weidman, you got to have kind of a, you know, little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. And right now, the guy can't walk. He's not going to be able to walk for months. Then he has to kind of really get into the recuperation mode, really has to get into the rehab. And then he has to train again. And it's just a long process. And it's not a process that gets any shorter as you get older, right? So it's a weird spot for Chris Weidman. You got to kind of put a carrot out in front of yourself. And then for Weidman, do you think that win or lose, was that Hall fight going to be a possible retirement fight? Seeing as how Chris Weidman won his last fight over Omari Akhmedov, he out-wrestled him. He went out there against Uriah Hall. He started to strike. I'm assuming at some point he would have kind of gone for the wrestling and the grappling. But for Weidman, he's always kind of been that guy that's like, you know what, just one more win. I just need another win, and then boom, it's right back up to the top. And it's never, let's say even Chris Weidman was at 15. It's not like he was going, geez, you know, I really want to fight with Marvin Vettori. When if he was at 15, geez, I really want to fight with Gerald Meerschaert. No, it was always, I want to fight Adesanya. I want to fight Rockhold. I want to fight the big names, the top dogs. It was never even a focus on the lower end of the spectrum, if you will. So Weidman's always been that guy. I wouldn't expect anything less than that, but it is going to be an uphill battle for the poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely had a path to the belt. I think that he thinks because he's a former champ, the path is a lot shorter than it is. But I mean, listen, you beat Uriah Hall, you call out Kevin Holland. Next thing you know, you're top five. I mean, Kevin Holland, for better or worse, has at least figured out how to make himself relevant. And he's, you know, he's another guy that we could put in that other division. Yeah, it's a different weight class, but he's another guy who you could say, for some reason, when you beat this guy, you maybe get more credit than you deserve for beating him because of all the shitty talks. So, I mean, Weidman definitely had a path. I think it probably would have been a retirement fight unless he was super impressive. But, you know how it goes, man. We talked about this 1,000 times. Fighters don't retire. The ring retires them. And if he went in there and looked that good against Uriah Hall, there's always going to be that next one. I beat him. How about this guy? And you start playing the game of, like, MMA math, where you look at Uriah Hall's most impressive win. If that guy's still in the promotion, then you make that move. So it's a lot. But at the same time, I think that I see both paths. I just wish one of these guys would figure out, we give GSP a lot of shit for walking away and not giving us the fights that we want. We didn't get Anderson, we didn't get Khabib. But the guy walked away. He came back once to be a double champ. And then kind of walked away and stayed away. Now, he flirts with it a little bit more than he maybe should, but at least we didn't have that moment where it was like he was past his prime. He wasn't looking good. He wasn't who he said, who we believe him to be. So, all right.
All right, John. And we'll move on. And listen, it wasn't a pay-per-view last weekend. It was a fight night. There was no recap show. So you got to answer this one. In all honesty, were you prelim watching last weekend or were you pencil boarding through the subdivision?
I don't even know what pencil boarding through the subdivision means. Is that a Canadian thing? Is that
no? Like, it's a real thing. You've never seen a pencil board? They're like this big. They got the big wheels. You skateboard on them, but it's a pencil board. They're real small. No, you've never seen one of those. So you weren't doing that then? Were you longboarding?
No,
I wasn't. No, you get that one. Okay. Did you watch the prelims?
I get where we're going. Okay. I'm the skateboard guy. I know. I got the Hurley hat on today.
All right. We'll go back to the prelims, though, and indulge me if you will. So I'm sure you did see the highlights of Randa Marcos up kicking Luana Pinheiro. And there were a lot of people out there, not just out there on social media, but hitting me up in the DMs. Bro, did you think she was faking it? Bro, did she fake it? My answer to you, I don't really care. I honestly don't care. You know enough that you shouldn't illegally up kick. You're told about it in the fighter meetings. You probably shouldn't do it in the fight. However, my fellow Canadian, Randa Marcos, went out on Instagram. And the quotable was, yes, my foot grazed her. But that my opponent's inability to continue seemed a bit oversold and suspect. I let her know after the eye poke, which she had a cut on her eye. There were a few eye pokes. That I wasn't leaving that cage without a win. And she stole that from me. I'm excited about whatever's next. I have a tone of heart in me that needs to be let out. Thank you for everyone that helped me in this camp. I love you all, and I'll be back soon. John, what do you make of the illegal upkick? What do you make of the fan reaction? And did Luana Pinheiro kind of oversell this one a little bit?
Well, listen, we talked about this with Sterling. Here's where I think it gets weird for me, is that we can't say when we like the story that the fight should have continued. And we don't care about the story, or we're not as invested in it. You know, just because Randa Marcos came out and said, I really wanted to leave the cage with this win, and she took that from me. Well, you took it from you when you upkicked illegally. So same thing with Piotr Jan. You took it from yourself. It's not Aljamain Sterling's job to necessarily get back in there and fight when you've broken the rules. He's doing you, to be completely candid, he's doing you a favor to get back in there if he's not at 100%, because no matter whether he can continue or not, is I don't want to say it's besides the point, but whether he can continue or not, or in the Marcos fight, the girl could continue or not, it's besides the point in this respect. If they were at, and I hate to play the percentages game, but if they were at 90% before the foul hit, should they be expected to continue at 40%? Is that really fair to them? You know, that's where I think this gets funky. Could they continue? Well, this whole sport is based on perseverance and pushing through and being tough and all that. So if you lay it on a fighter to be tough enough to continue, it's unfair. Either the foul was reason enough to call the fight off or it wasn't. This leaving the whole thing up to the fighter shit doesn't work for me. Just what do you think about the foul?
Yeah, like I'm usually pretty black and white on this stuff. And, you know, first eye poke, oh, was it a mistake? Was it an accident? Whatever. All right, you get a warning. But there's certain referees out there, and it's every single week, it's the same referee. I'm giving you a hard warning. And then it happens again. This is a hard warning. Or there's a knee, or there's a cup shot. All right, I get it. Two fighters throw a kick, one lands in the dick, and one doesn't. Okay, fine. But the second one, the third one, like, it's always at a referee's discretion. But with a kick like that, to me, in the moment, I thought, geez, that's pretty bad. Then to see the opponent sitting there, like, she looked totally dazed. I'm not hurt. I didn't get kicked in the face. But I do know that you're not supposed to kick somebody in the face that way. So it's an illegal shot. And whether Marcos meant to do it or not, she meant to kick. She's the one that threw the kick. It's her fault. And that's not to rag on Randa Marcos. There's so many people out there that ragged on Randa Marcos going into the fight. She's not a good fighter. She's a 500 record. I don't care. She fought good competition. She's been in the UFC for a long time. She had one of the best women's fights of all time in 2014 against Jessica Penne. You can't take that from her. Even though you don't look at it, you can't take that from her. But it's a bad record. It's a salty record. It doesn't matter. But in that performance, it was her fault. It's her loss. It's a disqualification. And for Pinedo, I don't know if she faked it or not. But after the fight, her coach was – they didn't even have a gurney. That was a weird thing. Her coach just picked her up and walked her out. It was very strange. But it's on Marcos. Whether or not her next fight's in the UFC, I don't know. But, yeah, hopefully we get to see her back. Hopefully we get to see both these women back 100%. But you hate to see it.
It's funny whenever a fighter throws a shot that results in a knockout, the most insulting thing that you can say to them is it's a lucky shot. Because they'll tell you, I threw it, I meant to throw it, it connected, whatever. But for some reason, they're happy to say I've lost control of all my abilities to strike legally when it comes to illegal strikes. Now, I know that people are, throwing strikes and they're shooting for the inner thigh and they hit the cup. I get that that happens. And I'm not trying to hold that against them and say, well, you were thrown in that area, so you were taking the risk. Although that's true. They were thrown in the area and they took the risk. But I just think that, you know, there needs to be more responsibility for it. And it shouldn't be on the person who's been fouled to say, oh, I'm cool. It's fine. No big deal. Imagine if you got, you know, there's like a flagrant in the NBA and the person was like, yeah, you know, it didn't hurt that much. Just make it a one. No, they tried to foul you. You're a big guy. You handled it well. It was harder to foul you, flagrantly because you're bigger. Than I think that we need to get a little more strict with the rules and not leave it up to the fighter who's already been fouled.
I'm still riled up about the Anche Jalea knockout. So
of course you are. I can understand. All right, we move on to sparring sessions. Craig, I'm going to ask you this question. We can spar about one of two things. The matter at hand is Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison said that her teammate at American Top Team, Colby Covington, or former teammate, I should say, fell in love with his hands before the Kamaru Usman fight and should have grappled more with Kamaru Usman based on how great of a grappler he was. Now, we have had this conversation in the past. So your choices are this. You can either argue about whether you agree with Kayla Harrison that Covington fell in love with his hands, or we could talk about grapplers/wrestlers in general falling in love with their hands, why they do it, is it the best thing for them? And the last thing I want to add to this is, you know, if the best thing that you do is a wash with the guy you're fighting, is it really in your best interest to do it? Because if you're Colby Covington, you walk in there and go, I might be a better grappler than him, but I'm probably a better striker than him, or at least I can keep a higher pace, or at least I can throw more volume. So from that perspective, attack it however you like.
I mean, that's what we normally see in those wrestler versus wrestler matchups. Like, the last time that we saw a high-level wrestler and high-level wrestler was last weekend. We had Merab Dvalishvili taking on Cody Stamann, and they struck, but they did mix in some of the takedowns. That was a great fight. I loved it for all it was worth. And for Kayla Harrison, she's a more, and listen, the broadcast is showing it now. It's DraftKings odds, whatever. She's a minus 2,000 favorite by DraftKings. On most sites, she's a minus 3,000. So for Kayla Harrison, when she goes into the majority of her fights, she's going to be the better judoka than anybody else she's ever going to fight unless she fights Ronda Rousey. She's going to be better at that one skill, so much light years better than everybody else that she can still use it. Are you ever going to see Kayla Harrison go out there and, you know, wear on somebody with a hard striking game plan? No. And you're never going to see somebody that good at judo against Kayla Harrison. She's still going to be able to use it. For Colby Covington, though, I can see where he would come from in a camp of, oh, just like you said, Kamaru Usman's such a good wrestler. Maybe I do have the leg up in striking. And again, we've talked about it, you and I, and we've talked about this fight so much, the first fight. I had Covington up. If that fifth round ended and we got a decision, I had Covington winning that fight based on the striking exchanges. Usman went out there, cracked him, dropped him, boom, fight's over. So we never get to see a decision. But did he fall in love with his hands before the fight? How am I to know? But yeah, normally when you see two high level wrestlers, we end up with a kickboxing bout, and usually they're pretty entertaining. You know, was last weekend a bit of a deviation from the mean as far as Stamann and Merab were concerned? Sure, but I don't know. I guess I would have had to have been in that camp.
I have one more thing to throw into the discussion. I want to get your thoughts on this. What is the thing that Colby Covington hangs his hat on?
That he's plays a strong Instagram game and has a fat savings account to pay people to be in those Instagram pictures
as a fighter, right? His wrestling, right? We can agree.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I guess my question would be, is it a bigger indignity to him to get out wrestled by Kamaru Usman or knocked out by him? I think if I'm him, I would rather get knocked out by Kamaru Usman than get out wrestled by him, because then, well, couple reasons. One, it shows everybody that Kamaru Usman's a better wrestler. And here's the one thing that we maybe have not thought about in all of this. Kayla Harrison, if he gets out-wrestled by Kamaru Usman, there is now a playbook for out-wrestling Colby Covington. So I think that maybe when these guys are in there with good wrestlers, they don't want to expose potential weaknesses that guys who are not as great of wrestlers can then train and exploit. Maybe it's like, I don't want to give you, you know, you see it in the NFL all the time, see it in the NBA. I believe this wholeheartedly. I can't prove it, but you'll see a big game in the NBA and a star is sitting out. And I think the reason why the star is sitting out is maybe they're injured, but maybe they don't want in the playoffs for the team that they might play to have the confidence to say, we beat this team at full strength. They want the little bit of a shred of doubt to be like, we beat the Nets, but they didn't have Harden. So the matchups are different and all of that. Same thing with AD. Same thing with LeBron. Listen, LeBron is missing the next two games. I'm not saying he's not injured, but they're two big games. Like games that the Lakers need, and he's sitting out. And maybe it's because, hey, if we see these guys down the road, they can't say we beat the Lakers at full strength and have that to hold over them. Same thing here with Covington, I believe. All right, Craig. Let's move on to the featured segment that has been a subject of a lot of confusion today. I don't have a list. I'm going to make it up as we go. The Power 10. And by power, I mean who's got juice in the UFC, in MMA period. Who can make things happen? Doesn't matter. Promoter, manager, fighter, however you want to put it. I will start with number one because I think, well, we can go 10 to 1 or 1 to 10. Let's go 1 to 10. I think it's more interesting to go 1 to 10 because It's more interesting to see who that 5-10 is.
And play along at home with this one. Throw it down in the comments section. Toss it on r/MMA. Like, I want to know what people are thinking about this.
I think Dane is the most powerful person in MMA. I mean, is that, can we agree on that or no?
Well, see, I did a throwback here, John. I did get ready for this one just a little bit. And I went on Google Trends. And I
found, you know,
related topics, related queries. Let's see where we're at. So if you type in mixed martial arts, you go worldwide, 12 months, web search. Australia's looking for it. Poland's big on it. Poland's actually the biggest. What's the first name that pops up?
You gotta go to
about the third page. Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor when you type in MMA. Well, I would say Conor McGregor over Dana White. I know Dana White, you know, plays the strings, but Conor McGregor's the name that everybody knows and talks about.
I agree with you there. And where it's really gonna get interesting now is as Conor's wealth increases, does he see a need to still do business with the UFC?
Well, he does a fight coming up.
Well, but when you, I'm saying once his contract runs out, do you think that he could, or would he even want to, on his own, promote fights, do one-offs, fight guys here, there? Like, do you have, you're interested in watching Conor fight. One, is it only MMA or is it MMA and boxing?
It's a little bit of both.
Okay. Is it only UFC fighters?
No, but I mean, I'm watching the PFL as we're taping. So
that's fair. All right. So we'll move on to three because we can flip flop one and two. So yep. I got Dana, yep. You got Conor. So who's next? I mean, do you think it's a promoter? Do you think it's because I could make a case at three for Ali Abdelaziz? Is that too high?
So I'm flipping down through this list. McGregor's 11th on related queries to or mixed martial arts. Then it's Wrestling Kingdom, American drama series. So maybe you go Frank Grillo, Nick Jonas. Maybe that's where you go with it. Then you've got training, topic, MMA Junkie, website, Khabib Nurmagomedov. And listen, with Khabib at number three, I mean, Dana, Conor, Ali, we made you. I would have Khabib at three, and even though he's not fighting, he's still up there in terms of ranked searches. Now, does that go back 12 months? Yeah, it does. So it still counts when Khabib was in competition. But I'd be fine with throwing him up there. I really do think he's a top five. If you don't have him at three, that's fine, but I would have him somewhere up there.
So we can – so but here's my question. Would you flip-flop Khabib and Ali? Are you comfortable with those two being three, four?
And listen, again, these are just Google Trends, and these are who people are looking for. But at the same time, sometimes the most powerful people aren't the ones that are out there in the limelight, right? So, yeah, I would be fine with flip-flopping and having like a 2-3, or sorry, 3-4 with Ali Abdelaziz and Khabib.
So we move on to five. Do we have any other promoters yet? I mean, listen, Shatri has half the planet watching one, allegedly.
You're fired.
Do you think Coker? I just don't feel like Coker, Campbell McLaren, or Ray Sefo. I just don't see it. You know what I mean?
Not that high. You know, top 10. Listen, I mean, I know it's been the topic du jour today on Thursday on Twitter, Campbell McLaren and Alan Murphy having a little bit of a Twitter spat there. Maybe you didn't catch it, but you know, I do understand, and maybe we don't talk about them as much as we should. But Combate has such a strong foothold on the Latin American market. Their ratings are great, and I understand that. Have I seen them? Kind of. But I know that they do a good job. I see the buzz on social media for them. They're doing a good job. Bellator's doing a good job. PFL with Ray Sefo and everybody that's involved, the investors, they're doing a great job. So maybe, you know, Martin Lewandowski as well. You throw somebody in closer to the bottom. But at five, if we're really talking about it, people still talk about John Jones. Is he not still kind of hanging around? Would you consider him up there?
Well, here's where the John Jones thing gets weird. Because he's trying to make a power play. Now it's not working. So that gets interesting. So, all right, let's run down the champions. Who do you think's got more influence, Jones or Adesanya?
Right now, Adesanya, because he's active.
All right, so let's
know he lost his last fight.
Let's put Adesanya on there. So Jones or Usman?
Usman's banging right now.
Okay, so we'll put Usman up there.
Jones, Amanda Nunes commands a division.
She does. And anybody lower, I don't see it. Right, I don't see, because a lot of young champions in the lower divisions. So I have Adesanya, Usman. I would say somewhere in here we have to put unnamed executive at ESPN. I'm sure that person has some sway. I'm sure we have to put
Ariel in DC.
Yeah, who do you think the most powerful? I would put Ariel in the top 10. Here's why. Because I think that, and this is a dangerous game if he chooses to play it, but I do think Ariel could go off on his own. I think that if Ariel, I don't think he should, but I think I'll put it to you like this. My guy, I'm gonna use my guy here. I think if Ariel wanted to, he could be the Bill Simmons of MMA. He could start a website. I don't know if he'd want to, but he could start a website. He could start putting guys on. He could start a whole podcast network. I think Ariel has the juice to do that. Should things sour with ESPN? So if you could do that, then I got to put you in the top 10.
Now, when you look at MMA as a whole, you know, you could go the puritanical way. You could look at the MMA Journalists Association, and Ariel Helwani had a hand in that a while ago, but the elections are going on right now. You only have one option for president, who's Josh Gross. So that's going to be your president, unless enough people vote against him, I guess, maybe. But that's, you could go that way. You could look at it in terms of entertainment, like you said. And if you do choose to look at MMA as a form of entertainment, you look at the two biggest entertainers out there. Are they not Joe Rogan and, by extension, Brendan Schaub? I know Luke Thomas, Brian Campbell over with CBS, but Schaub commands an audience. Joe Rogan has a huge audience and brings a lot of people in. So, listen, love them or hate them, right? Like, they're both right there.
Yeah, we can put them on there. We got a space left. Because I'll put Rogan and Schaub together, because why not?
That's fair.
And quiet is kept. Keep your eye on Anik. Anik's got a podcast. Anik's got things going on. He could, and not for nothing, I think Anik might be a little bit more of a power. He kind of tips things on that podcast where you're like, he's a little bit more in these meetings than we might think he is. He's on the inside for sure. The last guy or gal, is there anybody that you think could really sway the labor situation? Is there anybody that you think, either as a fighter, maybe they're already on this list, or representative, you know? I mean, I know there's somebody that we don't want to talk about, but listen, the UFC's might be trying to kill this guy because he's knows so much. So, I mean, that's got to have some influence. No, who do you think could swing labor? Is it only going to be, because we talk about this all the time, about who's the person that's going to make that swing. Do you think there's a commissioner that's more powerful than the others? Obviously, we'll talk about California later. Do you think there's somebody in that world?
Does Bob Bennett influence things that much? Like, could we go with Bob Bennett?
Maybe. Who do you think would be the person to swing the
labor negotiations? It's tough.
Leslie, I mean,
I've always thought Leslie Smith, but I don't know. I mean, it's in such an odd spot, right? We'll reference an interview that came out earlier this week with SiriusXM's MMA Nation. Anthony Smith was there. RJ Clifford was there. All the news surrounding Diego Sanchez has made such a big impact. And it does that sway fighter pay and whatnot? I mean, listen, by extension, that's a part of the conversation, I believe, right? But I just don't know if that, coupled with John Jones, coupled with everything else, I don't know if it's going to have a serious impact. We've really talked about fighter pay a lot on this show. And at this point, I've thrown so many names out there and gone back to the well with so many more that I don't even know if anything's going to happen out of all of this. I really don't.
I agree. And we move on. Guys, you put your top 10 in the comments.
It's tough. It's not easy.
It is tough. And I'll put up I'll make a graphic with our top 10, what we kind of came to. All right, guys, it's moving for the gram. Craig, Kamaru Usman wants to fight again on the super exciting, how could anybody possibly miss Phoenix card. He wants to fight Michael Chiesa, is the name that we're hearing. What are your thoughts on that? Obviously, we're all talking about Colby Covington. Is he dropping Chiesa's name because Chiesa will be available earlier? Is he dropping Chiesa's name because that who's is the guy he thinks deserves a fight? Is he dropping Chiesa's name to just fuck with Covington? What's the point of even the whole Chiesa of it all?
What happens if you're like Dean Thomas or Karen Bryan and you're on the panel with Michael Chiesa and Kamaru Usman? Like, that's got to be awkward, right?
Yeah,
it's got to be really awkward.
Thanksgiving dinner.
It's a good fight, right? Like, I'd be down for it. Are there better fights to make? Yeah. Are there fights that make more sense? Sure. But listen, you want a fresh name? That's one. I'd be cooler with Vicente Luque or the rematch between Covington. But both guys are fresh. Both guys had recent fights. Case looked good against Neil Magny. So I'm cool with it. But it's got to make that desk really awkward if those guys work together some more.
I agree. All right, we move on to one Twitter hitter. Craig, we kind of alluded to this in the previous segment, but I'm just curious. So I made this our one Twitter hitter. Who's number two, do you think, right now in the promotion world? I mean, obviously UFC is number one. I feel like it's PFL season, so they're kind of, you know, customer facing, if you will. Like, we see them a lot. Bellator's been shuffling lately, trying to put things together. And then there's Combate, but it's probably between Bellator and PFL. What do you think? Who's number two?
So do you want my answer or do you want the numbers?
I'll take the numbers first and then your answer.
Okay, so you want the numbers. So in the last 12 months worldwide, web search, Professional Fighters League, Bellator MMA, Bellator hit the 100 in April. The highest that PFL's hit is 31. Compared to 30 the week of April 18th to April 24th. The data from Google Trends. Overall, obviously Bellator had the hits. They had some shows. They had some rumblings, at least. I know last year was kind of bare for Bellator, but there were some shows. So Bellator, you know, kind of gets the cake for 2020. 2021, they had such a big spike right there when they came back compared to PFL. Bit of a spike. And then you got to consider, why did PFL have a bit of a spike? Well, they've been off for a year, and then they had a show. They didn't really touch many Bellator's peaks. And then they brought on Ray Lewis, and they brought on Wiz Khalifa and all of these celebrity investors. And it made a bit of a dent, but it didn't make that big of a dent. To me, Bellator's the number two. They've got the longevity. They've got somewhat of a proven track record, I guess, maybe. Coker makes these big splashes. And I talk about Bellator more than I talk about PFL. But then you look at the other shows out there. I mean, John, there's not a lot of people talking about the PFL. And then to really add it, or, you know, insult to injury, salt to the wound. We did the Clay Collard, Anthony Pettis prediction video. It didn't stack up to any of the Bellator stuff that we've done. And maybe that's our fans recognize us for Bellator stuff, so they come back for it. But it didn't do well, and it ranked pretty high in search, too. So there's not a lot of people looking for the PFL stuff. They're used to Bellator. I think Bellator is number two. PFL's done a great job to try and be number two, to market themselves as, hey, we're number two, hashtag number two. But they got to do a lot more. They got to do a lot of heavy lifting to take that crown right now.
Well, and the weird thing about that is when we talk about, you know, if we can use Google Trends as what we feel is a accurate metric of a company's footing in the MMA business, and all these things that throughout all these other shows, and I know that we're not completely in the dark on them, but all these things that we think are sort of curious decisions, they make sense when you see these Google spikes, right? And the thing that Bellator can do financially that maybe the PFL can't is, you know, the PFL is cannibalizing itself to allow for some name recognition, right? They can't give Lyoto Machida or even Anthony Pettis for that matter a piece of their company, so they give it to Ray Lewis, and Ray Lewis is brought in and he invests with them, and now he's a name that would make you search the PFL. Whereas what Bellator does is they have those fighters, so you search all this when the fight gets announced, and then you search when the fight is near, and then you search when the fight happens. The issue is with bringing in Ray Lewis and Wiz Khalifa and all this, that, and the other It's cool that they're connected to the PFL, but there's no other reason to search other than the announcement of the partnership with the PFL. There's no other actionable thing they do.
So, John, I want to flip this over and go to posting to the book. And I've actually got one for you because we've talked about Bellator, PFL, who's number two. We've talked about who are the power players in MMA earlier on, like our top 10 ranking list. Now we're talking posting to the book. Hi, Mom. Hi, Grandma. When we're looking at Facebook, John, I actually want to ask a Facebook question. Do you think in terms of the overall MMA media landscape, the way that social media has affected the fights, we've got TikTok, we've got Twitter, we've got all of these means of following along with MMA, but it seems like everybody goes back to Facebook every now and again. When I do these fight deep dives, sometimes I end up watching these random obscure promotions on Facebook. Do you think that there has to be more of an emphasis by these MMA promotions with Facebook where there's legions of fans that might not be the most hardcore? Or do we have to keep heavy hitting with the Instagrams, the Twitters, and the TikToks of the world and leave Facebook to my mom and my grandmother?
Well, I think that, I mean, MMA Twitter's big. I don't know. I don't think MMA Instagram's that big. The problem is that unfortunately the MMA world is a very toxic community at times. There was a girl who put a video out. I didn't watch the video, but I did see somebody posted it. I watched part of it. The gist of it was the girl was probably in her early 20s, and she said, "Why is the MMA community so toxic?" And the thing that she was saying was, "Why do you not embrace new fans more in the community?" Right? Not the UFC. The UFC would love to have new fans. They'd love to have 23-year-old girls getting together and all going to see a fight. But the reality is that they don't have that. So I guess the thing is not so much, and this is a little bit of a stretch on my part, but stay with me. It's not so much that I think the reason why they end up on Facebook is those are the communities, and Twitter, those are the communities where people argue. And people like to argue about MMA. And I think that's what they're there for. They're there to go back and forth. So where is MMA huge on social media? Reddit? Twitter, Facebook. Three places where people argue. People don't argue on Instagram. People don't argue on TikTok. I saw this TikTok. I'm addicted to TikTok now because for a number of reasons. But I saw something on TikTok, and immediately I went to the comments because I'm like, you know, sometimes you see something and you can already predict it. Sometimes I play this game. It's a dumb game. But somebody will say something, and I'll look at the comments, and I'll go, how long until I see the obvious shithead comment, the one that you think in your head but don't put down because you're not an asshole. I'm like, how long do I see it? And inevitably you see the comment that you're expecting to see, right? From the one asshole who's like, you know, nice jugs or whatever it is they say about someone, right? It's a shitty thing.
Not a TikTok guy, I wouldn't know.
No, I'm saying that's what they do on Twitter and Facebook. You're gonna see that shitty comment. You don't see him on Instagram. You don't see him on TikTok. People are just nice. And I'm not saying that's never going to stop. People at some point might stop being nice, start getting real. The real world, hashtag. That's why I think that's where they are. So yeah, do I think that the UFC, do I think the PFL, do I think Bellator, do I think Fight Night Picks could do a better job on Instagram and TikTok? Yeah. But I just don't think the people that are on those sites. And in fairness to UFC, PFL, Bellator, and Fight Night Picks, it's hard to do what we do on those mediums. It's hard to make just a picture signify what we have to say. Now, a lot of the shit that we do, honestly, could be a TikTok. Lists and all that stuff. We could figure out a way to do that. A dance, you know. But yeah, I'm with you. All right, Craig, let's move on to start the conversation. I think I got a good one for you this week because something I was not aware of, I'm aware of now. Thank you, MMA Fighting. And it's not where it needs to be, but it is showing the beginnings, the foundation, the seedlings of something that could be a big deal, which is the California State Athletic Commission is looking to add MMA fighters to the boxing pension. Now, Here's the ins and the outs of the boxing pension, very briefly. Boxers, and this is courtesy of MMA Fighting, thank you to Stephen Morocco, So the way it works is there's a pension that boxers get that is not a lot. It's based on ticket sales, right? So for every ticket sold to a boxing event, 88 cents goes to the fund with a cap of $4,600 per event. Now, we'll do the math here in a second, but boxers who meet its age and experience requirements, they have to be over 50 and have fought a specified number of rounds with no more than a 3-year break, which is odd, are eligible to receive a portion of money from the fund. To date, the fund is valued at how much do you think?
How long has it been around?
A while? I don't know.
$200,000.
It's more than that. I apologize. It's been around since 1982.
Okay.
Does that change your answer?
Millions.
Okay. $5.3 million.
It's pretty good.
And has cut checks from the low five figures into the six figures for retired boxers. Okay, this is what Andy Foster told MMA Fighting. Now, one, that is something, right? I'm going to leave it at that. That's something. That's a place to start. So now, if you have a union or you have representation, 88 cents maybe becomes $5, maybe become, it won't go from $88 to $5, $2 per ticket, okay? Maybe the cap goes from 4,600 to 8,000. Right now, you're bargaining something. Here's what I think is interesting. I've been following MMA and boxing for a very long time. I've never heard of this. So that doesn't mean that it hasn't been publicized. It just means that I haven't been aware of it. So one, do you like it? Two, do you think connecting MMA to this would be a larger would make the fund larger, obviously. But do you think that, because I'm guessing this is a California thing, if the California State Athletic Commission is in charge of it. So my question is, do you think that is there a way to make it like across the board? Now we're connecting commissions, which is damn near impossible. Here's the way to start the conversation. Do you like this, and how can it be expanded upon? Is my question.
I like it. The thing that kind of scares me a little bit is there's big boxing fights in California. There always were. There still has been. You haven't heard about this. That's a really interesting thing to me. That's why it's great that we have, you know, two totally different demographic of fans. Yeah, we're both white guys, but one guy's from Phoenix, has been around the scene for a long time, gets boxing. One's not. One's from Canada. But when I look at this, I think it's great. I think it's awesome. California does things a little bit differently in life, but also in combat sports. I mean, we've seen it where not hydration testing, but you have to weigh a certain amount on Monday that you weigh on Friday when you weigh in. We saw at one point Drew Dober miss weight. I remember this one vividly. Drew Dober missed weight at lightweight. California was like, hey, next fight's got to be at 170. Drew Dober was like, haha, I'll take my next fight at 155 in a different state, and that'll be that. And we never really heard about Drew Dober at 170 anymore. But commissions are funny. And I look at it like, hey, if the world was the way it was 2 years ago, why doesn't the UFC go to Quebec? John, do you know why they don't go to Quebec? I've really thought about this one hard. I just found this out recently. The whole, well, GSP didn't actually weigh 170 pounds for his title fight in Quebec. And then I look through it, and Quebec used to round up or down to the nearest, or they would round down to the nearest point, I guess, as far as pounds. So you could weigh 170.8 for your title fight. They consider it 170. You'd weigh 169.9. Okay, you weighed 169. Really, the UFC hasn't gone back. They went back once without GSP there, and that was it. They haven't gone there since. So maybe with the UFC or certain big MMA promotions like California, you go, hey, geez, $2, it doesn't go to us. Should it really go to a commission? Should it really go to a pension fund? I feel like a cynic when I say that, but listen, could a promotion do that? Yeah, they could. But California is the place to be. The UFC's obviously shown a commitment to the LA area. We've had UFC Sacramento in the past. You've got big gyms in San Jose, where the UFC doesn't really go. It's Bellator's home. Sacramento, San Diego, LA. So I think they'll still have cards there. But overall, I think it's a great thing. It's a really good thing because there's certain people that just don't look out for their future. And if you have somebody looking out for you, that's kind of saving preemptively for you. So when you're what, over 50 and you've had this many rounds, so many fights, whatever, I think it's a good thing in the end.
I hope that they come figure out a way to do this that's diplomatic, in the sense that, you know, if you're Nate and Nick Diaz, you deserve to have a pension. But if you're going to tell me that I can't have more than a 3-year break, well, the Diaz brothers are out. So, you know what I mean? Like, I hope they figure out a way to sort of change it up a little bit. All right, Craig, let's move on to finish strong. I want to talk about this Adesanya-Vittori fight for a different way, for a different reason. It's in Phoenix. I'm in Phoenix, but my question to you is, why do you think they're having an Adesanya fight in Phoenix? Because here's the thing. Do you think that it's because they want to see I think that Adesanya will travel, meaning if you're watching the Adesanya fight, it doesn't matter where you are, you're going to do the same buys. So whatever, wherever he is, you're going to buy it the same as you would wherever. But maybe they're wondering, you know, we can hold a lesser fighter in Vegas and it'll sell out because it's Vegas. Let's have Adesanya fill a stadium that's not in Vegas. Does that make sense? Like maybe a bigger gate?
Yeah, but if they went with that, they should have just had him and Vittori and that's it. They shouldn't have had Figueiredo Moreno for a belt. They shouldn't have a 5-round fight between Diaz and Leon Edwards. If that was the thinking, if you really want to see how big of a star Israel Adesanya is, put him on the North Pole, try and see if he can draw fans, or put him on the South Pole and see if he can draw fans, or put him in God knows where and see if he can still draw Arizona, apparently.
I mean, this is a listen. The UFC's always been good to Arizona, typically once every 3 years. I mean, they get good cards. Part of it's because we have, you know, big name fighters that fight from here. But so you can put a lot of guys locally that have at least some recognition, you know. What do you think? Why send him here? Just because this is when he wants to fight and that's where they're going to be?
It could have been a venue thing.
Really,
right?
As simple as that?
It could have been a venue thing too. I mean, where they're going to Glendale, so is it Gila or Gila River Arena? Is that where they're going?
Yeah.
Where the Coyotes play. I mean, wishful thinking the Coyotes are going to be doing well by the end of the season. But I honestly don't have a great answer for it. I was so flabbergasted when I saw that on the broadcast. Well, I was like, yeah, we're going live and we're going to Phoenix.
You know, here's the thing. I think the other thing that we might be missing here is that, like, maybe they don't want Israel to compete with whoever they want to put on the fight week card. I don't know. I don't know that they're going to do International Fight Week. They haven't. There hasn't been any leaks about it yet. But typically, listen, I'm a guy that used to go to International Fight Week all the time, so I know that it takes a minute for them to get their shit together and decide when the Hall of Fame ceremony is going to be and all that. I doubt. I mean, we're getting there. We're really getting there where they could potentially do it. But maybe they're putting somebody on that Fight Week card, and they don't want Adesanya to play second fiddle to them, and they don't want them to play second fiddle to Adesanya. So they were just like, all right, we can't have both of you on here. We want both of you guys. Like, what names have you heard connected to the July card?
I haven't heard anything. My only other, my follow-up to the whole, can Adesanya sell? Who sold the fight at Marvel Stadium when they went there? Yeah. And it was one of the biggest cards of all time. Was it Whitaker? Was it Adesanya? I don't know. I mean, Adesanya got the bigger show out of it. He had the finish. He had the win. I've said time and again that this guy's the biggest star in the sport. Did he lose the last fight? Sure, but people are still going to be interested in seeing him fighting. It is weird that they're going to Phoenix, but maybe it was just a booking thing. Is there a reason why they can't go to T-Mobile just yet? I don't know, but go Arizona.
go Arizona. So the other one, let's talk about Cormier. He's talking about John Jones again, which is always bad news. What are we talking about? It's Conor and Poirier on the July card.
That is 263. Yeah.
So the reason why they're probably putting Adesanya in Phoenix is because you don't want to put Conor and Poirier isn't for a belt, so you can't put a champion over top of them. All right. Cormier's talking about Jones again. And I want to bring two things in here on this, which is Cormier and Chael. Chael's theory is that John Jones is not afraid to fight Ngannou, but he's not in a hurry to fight him. And his theory is that when you're the champ and you're the baddest, you know, MF-er walking the planet, you want everyone to know that, and you want to destroy anyone else that lays claim to it. And he said the fact that John Jones brought up money means that he is not as convinced, because he's been knocking everybody out that looked in his direction for a decade. And now all of a sudden it's money. Now we'll bring Cormier in. Cormier says that he's going to get paid to fight Ngannou, just not Conor money. Do you think that that Jones has some doubt? Do you think this is Jones's nest egg fight where he's like, I'm seeing the end of this thing and I need to get a real big cash out, and Ngannou's going to be the guy because I know Ngannou's, you know, listen, if Ngannou fights Lewis and Lewis beats Ngannou, I don't think Jones
again.
I don't think Jones Lewis is as big as Jones Ngannou. So what do you think? What do you think the play is here?
This is where we're cashing in the chips. Boardman gets paid. This is the one. This is it. I mean, he could have gone up to heavyweight at any other point in time and fought Stipe or whoever else was a champ for Doom, Kane, I guess, maybe to an extent. Like, he could have done it at any point, but this was the time. This is the fight. And if not now, when? I mean, it's not like John's getting any younger. And, you know, he's always had these issues outside of the cage, but this is it. So I can't blame him for kind of going, yeah, full nest egg, full chips on the table. I want to get paid, because what are the alternatives? Jan Blachowicz, the winner of Blachowicz to Teixeira, Jiří Procházka, is that going to sell? I mean, it's going to, I'm going to be buying the pay-per-view either way. Right. So they're not appealing to me, but, to me, you can market that Ngannou fight any way you want. So that's the play. And I think for John, you got to finally go all in. Was Anthony Smith the fight to get paid? No. Was Thiago Santos the fight to get paid? No. Was the Gustafsson rematch the fight to get paid? Probably not. But the Ngannou one is. So, yeah, I'm all right with him going for it. And again, we're a pro fighter getting paid show. So,
yeah, and paid. I'm with you. The last thing I'll say on that note is this. I think there's a little bit of, and you're gonna love this metaphor. I think there's a little bit of Evel Knievel at work here. When John Jones is looking at like Evel Knievel, and Evel Knievel goes, "You want me to jump what? It's gonna cost you." I think he's looking at, "You want me to do what? You want me to fight this guy at heavyweight? My first fight at heavyweight? It's gonna cost you." So I do think that he's trying to set himself up for the after career, and he views this as like, this is the put all my chips in the middle. And let's let it ride, fight. But also, there's a degree of difficulty here that would necessitate a big paycheck. All right, guys, there you have it. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FFP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Sweet dreams tonight, Anche D'Elia. Sweet dreams.
Check out the other posters of the book on the Patreon. Peace.